The following content is meant purely for educational and informational purposes and should not be relied upon as financial, investment, legal, tax, or any other professional advice. This is the Fundamentals Podcast, where we demystify crypto and help you navigate this ever-evolving internet-native economy. In this episode of the Fundamentals Podcast, we're joined by Michael Kong, the CEO and CIO of the Phantom Foundation. He joins us to discuss the unique value proposition of Phantom within the blockchain landscape, its core technology, and approach to achieving scalability. We explore the structure of the blockchain market sector, how Michael sees it developing, and where Phantom fits into this vision in the long run. We delve into the architectural development of Phantom, walk through Phantom's economic model, and learn how it drives network sustainability. Lastly, we speak about current business development focus areas and challenges to tackle. Michael highlights Phantom's new technology, Sonic, and describes its potential impact for unlocking growth. Tune in for a great discussion about the fundamentals of Phantom. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast. It is great to have you on.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, really appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity.
Of course. I've been looking forward to get to dive into the whole Phantom ecosystem, everything that's going on at the moment, and how you're positioned within the space. But before we start diving into the details, it would be great if you could kind of preface this session with what is Phantom's core value proposition within the blockchain landscape?
So I think its core value proposition right now is essentially it's like speed and scalability and being able to achieve that in what we call like a permissionless environment. So just to dive down into what I mean by that. So the way that like Phantom's like consensus mechanism works, and first of all, just to give a general idea about Phantom, it's its own like blockchain. I commonly refer to it as a layer one, although I don't like particularly like these terms. I just like to say, you know, it's its own blockchain. It confirms transactions itself. It connects with other parts of the technology stack, such as like the Ethereum virtual machine, basically the smart contract engine. So the way that you would write, compile, and deploy smart contracts on Ethereum essentially works in a very similar or the same manner as on Phantom, right? But what makes Phantom, you know, unique or I guess different from say Ethereum or other projects out there is its ability to confirm transactions in an asynchronous manner. And what I mean by that is, you know, intuitively, if you're processing one block at a time, right, say on Ethereum, it's going to be slower than if you can process, say, multiple blocks at the same time, right? You know, if you can process, say, three blocks, if your network can process three blocks simultaneously, then that is going to be faster than processing one block at a time sequentially. And that's essentially like how the Phantom consensus works. Is that there's a series of algorithms that allows different parts of the network to confirm different transactions at the same time, but then they all somehow get put together on the same ledger. So you do get that final ordering of transactions, because that's a key property of blockchains, that you have transactions that are ordered, you know, from the beginning of time to the most recent time, and that it's the same between all of the nodes. So we still achieve that final ordering in the end, but we do it in a kind of like a unique manner that allows you to get higher transaction throughput. And we're able to do it in a permissionless environment. So we don't, for example, like necessarily know like you are behind all the nodes. There's no like central authority that says, okay, if you come to me, you know, I don't know, I'm the single source of truth. I'm the one that, you know, can, you know, determine like the final order of transactions. It's all done by the network, like 2/3 of the total voting power of the network is how you confirm a transaction.
Got it. That is a great overview. Thank you for that. Now, I want to tag on. You mentioned that you don't like the term L1 because I feel that has become somewhat of a universally accepted way to frame the blockchain landscape. We have L1s, L2s, and now we're speaking about L3s, etc. How do you think about the structure of the blockchain landscape if you don't like the terms L1, L2, etc.?
Well, I think like L1s and L2s are pretty much the same, right? So the reason why people make a distinction is because they believe that, oh, you know, an L1 is kind of like Phantom or a few other chains where they just run independently from, say, Ethereum. They're just like their own standalone chain and they run their own ecosystems and like consensus mechanisms, right? And then people have the idea that, oh, this is in contrast to, say, like an L2, which, you know, supposedly like sits on top of Ethereum and essentially inherits their security properties of Ethereum, but still allows you to, you know, execute transactions in a more scalable manner, you know, with lower transaction costs, because, you know, you're using this like additional software that sits on top of Ethereum. But in reality, that's not like really the case, right? So like the way that like these L2s work is that the reason why you're able to use a surface like what appears to be more efficiently than say Ethereum, you pay lower fees, etc., is because the consensus the way that the transactions are confirmed is really on their own like network, right? And they just have a bridge to Ethereum where people can move assets or roll up assets from Ethereum to, you know, the L2 and back down, right? So essentially it's like its own, the L2 is like their own network that have a bridge that connect to Ethereum. And so what they're essentially doing is that they're trading the property, the security properties of Ethereum for their own security properties, which tend to be like less than Ethereum. And in doing so, you know, you're basically trading like security for performance, right? But because these L2s confirm transactions on their own chains and they have their own consensus mechanisms and they have their own way of storing the data, that is pretty much what like an L1 is as well, right? You know, it's running its own consensus mechanism, storing its own data, executing its own transactions. It's just that, you know, they have this like bridge that they, you know, periodically will package all the transactions and submit to Ethereum. But Ethereum is not, you know, confirming that all of the transactions in the package are correct and are ordered in the correct manner, right? It just assumes that's what the L2 has done and that it's correct and that they're happy to confirm this like batch of transactions on its own network. So in reality, the properties of an L2 and an L1 pretty much the same conceptually speaking. And that's why I don't really like the term. I like more of the term like its own distributed ledger, because I think that's more like better defined.
Got it. Thank you for sharing. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned some of the top optimizations that you're focusing on with Phantom. And given that there are several blockchains within the market that are kind of trying to tackle the same scalability, speed, and throughput issues, could you really just crystallize what your unique selling proposition is within this landscape?
Yeah, so the unique selling proposition, I guess, in terms of the technology, you know, is that we don't just have this unique consensus engine, this asynchronous like consensus engine, as I described earlier in this podcast, but we also have a lot more scalable technology coming down the line. And in fact, you know, we just released the testnet of, you know, vastly improved technology stack just a few days ago. And so what we've done is that we've optimized different parts of the stack that say other chains and Ethereum in particular have not really focused on, right? Because when you confirm a transaction, particularly if it's like a smart contract based transaction, it's not just consensus that you have to consider, right? Obviously, consensus is a very important part of confirming a transaction. That's how you get, you know, the transaction actually embedded into the blockchain. But there's a lot of processes involved in, you know, confirming a transaction. You know, firstly, the user has to submit data to like an RPC server that has to be sent to the network. And then those transactions have to be, you know, executed by, you know, what we call a virtual machine. And it's essentially like a layer of software that executes a smart contract to make sure that, you know, it understands like exactly like what the transaction is supposed to do, right? And then when you execute the smart contract, it has to be saved in the local database, and then it gets passed on between different nodes, and the whole process kind of repeats itself, right? Per node in the network that confirms the transaction. And so what we've done is that we've really focused on optimizing like the smart contract processing layer. So that's to do with, you know, the way the data is stored. It's to do with the way that transactions are executed via the virtual machine, which is why that we've built like our own virtual machine, which is totally Ethereum compatible. We've built our own storage system, which also happens to be compatible with the existing storage system. But we've been able to take advantage of the properties of the way that our consensus works, being able to process transaction asynchronously to get much, much better performance than I think any other chain that's out there. And we're talking about like significant reductions in the amount of storage as well, you know, by more than 90% for all kinds of nodes. We're talking about, you know, massive increases in throughput to, you know, over 2,000 transactions per second, whereas the active chain at the moment can only handle, you know, maybe, you know, 20 or 30 or 40. And these are all smart contract based transactions. And I mean, that's what makes Phantom unique, really, in terms of a technology that people can take advantage of, particularly when this new technology gets deployed to the mainnet.
Got it. That is great. Now, given this architecture that you pretty much just laid out there, which apps are best suited to be built on Phantom? Do you have a purely generalistic approach in terms of what kind of developer activity you want to attract, or have you kind of sharpened that focus in any way?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, Phantom is like a general smart contract platform. So any sort of like application that is built on Ethereum could be essentially deployed on Phantom as well and operate in the same way. It just operates in a, you know, more efficient, scalable manner because of the different technology that we have that we've employed. But in terms of like specific applications, you know, if you have an application that consumes a lot of transactions, right? You know, has a lot of interactions with, you know, with users, you know, submit a lot of transactions, and they do it like repeatedly over a period of time, such as a game. You know, when you're building up like a character, or you're building up, you know, a particular sort of entity, then a high throughput chain like Phantom really does make sense, because essentially what we're trying to solve for is that, you know, if you have a really popular application that, you know, your users will be able to keep using the popular application, it's not going to be a bottleneck. They're going to keep being able to pay no transaction fees. And also very significantly, you know, if there are other popular applications that run on the network, that those popular applications are not going to slow each other down, right? And so really, I think, in my opinion, like a strong use case for Phantom going forward, particularly as we develop and deploy the new technology to the mainnet, will be any sort of application that requires high throughput. So, you know, just to take another example, like a DEX, you know, DEX really does depend on like high throughput. That's how the DEX earns its fees, you know, it's by volume. Well, you know, if you have a high throughput chain, then people could engage in tremendous volumes in trades and many different trades, and it will just keep running very smoothly, just fine. And, you know, people can already see an example of that via an application that the Phantom Foundation put together for the testnet, as well as like a few community applications as well. So there's one community application, for example, created by the PaintSwap team, and PaintSwap is the most popular NFT marketplace on Phantom. They're also responsible for a very popular game on Phantom called S4 Kingdom. And they built like a little application connected to our new testnet called Sonic. And it showed you could mint an NFT on Sonic versus the current Phantom mainnet versus Avalanche, right? And it showed that consistently, if you go and mint NFTs repeatedly, say on Sonic, you know, your NFT gets minted in literally a second. And that's factoring in, you know, the delays with, you know, MetaMask and all the other, you know, connection delays and all that. And it's about 1 second. Meanwhile, you mint that on Phantom at the moment, and it kind of varies a bit because the network isn't as stable. So you could vary from 3 seconds to 5 seconds to maybe even 11 seconds on some occasion. And on Avalanche, it's kind of like a similar story as well. So I think, you know, these sorts of like mini applications, if I can call them that, like minting NFTs or doing swaps on Phantom or on the Phantom testnet, really demonstrates that this is like the speed and the throughput that you really get on the new technology. And so if you're building that sort of application that does these sorts of transactions, then Phantom is a really good idea for you to use.
Got it. Yeah, that is definitely great. If we briefly envision a fully crypto native future, say 10 years from now, which may be a bit ambitious, how do you see Phantom evolving and its position evolving into, given all the different approaches to building blockchain networks at the moment? And how do you see that market kind of either consolidating or fragmenting?
So I think into the future, like maybe 5 or 10 years, there probably won't be as many like different blockchains out there as it currently exists. You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, obviously like a few years ago, there was only one smart contract engine really out there, and that was Ethereum, you know, which launched, I think it launched its first mainnet in July 2015, right? Not that long ago, but there was only like Ethereum for a few years. And then came along like different blockchain projects or different blockchain platforms out there, such as, you know, Phantom and others. And they purported to solve scalability issues that existed on Ethereum, you know, using a variety of different like strategies or techniques. And of course, like the approach that Phantom went through was being able to like process transactions asynchronously, but doing it in the same sort of like permissionless manner, say that the Ethereum network works, right, conceptually. I think in the future, you know, there will be like some consolidation just with economies of scale to maybe, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 popular blockchain different projects that are out there, not like the 20 or 30 that we see at the moment. And so really the objective of Phantom is to essentially stay relevant, right? And that's really a twofold strategy. One is building out the technology like we talked about, because obviously you need to have really working technology that's competitive, that people can see, you know, really benefits them as a developer or user, you know, maintaining low transaction fees, maintaining really fast confirmation times or what we call time to finality, and also being able to handle like large volumes of transactions, you know, really popular applications that exist out there, but also, you know, the community aspect as well. So we're trying to, you know, really focus on getting builders on board, you know, having all sorts of hackathon and different like grants programs. And I think, you know, there will be like consolidation into the future, and it's just about, as I mentioned before, staying relevant. And in terms of like different like technology angles that people are trying to solve in order to, you know, make the networks more scalable, you know, I think there's a variety of different like pathways that are out there. Obviously, like one of the pathways that has gotten a lot of hype is focusing on zero knowledge, like proof technology. And that is, you know, the idea that you don't need to have all the nodes in the network perform all this, the same sort of transactions in order to confirm them, but you only need, say, one or a few computers in the network to confirm a transaction, and then the rest of the computers can see the results. So far, in my opinion, it doesn't look like, you know, the scalability claims of zero knowledge proofs have really manifested to the degree that people may have hoped. I mean, it might in the future, but, you know, that's one scalability approach. Another scalability approach that Phantom is also going to be exploring in the future is the idea of sharding. So that's being able to, you know, not have the entire network confirm every single transaction in the network, but have different parts of the network confirm different parts, and then basically put all the shards together or the data together to get the final order of transactions. We think that is conceptually like a very like good idea. And I know like other chains out there, including Ethereum, have talked about it a lot. And then, you know, another aspect of scalability into the future is, you know, what Phantom has been working on, you know, not just scaling the consensus that I mentioned before, but scaling the way that smart contracts are processed and stored on the network. And also, I think that is an area that really hasn't had much focus in the blockchain space as a whole. It's like mainly Phantom that is really focused on, you know, building a new, you know, virtual machine that solves scalability problems, you know, taking advantage of asynchronous processing of transactions, the way that data is stored, to dramatically reduce the storage size and make transactions execute a lot faster. And I think that's what makes us unique. And I do think we have this cutting edge technology that, you know, will be out into the mainnet over the next few months, and people should really see the difference.
Yeah, that's awesome. And given that you are an EVM compatible chain, what are your general thoughts on the importance of EVM compatibility, especially given what you just spoke about, that your kind of thoughts on the future of the blockchain market are that there will be like consolidation happening, and I would assume that interoperability there is quite important.
Yeah, so we think like EVM compatibility is very important. The key reason being is that, you know, most smart contract developers out there are familiar with, you know, deploying on Ethereum, right? You know, naturally, it's the biggest chain that's out there. I think it will remain the biggest chain for a very long time, you know, for a number of reasons. You know, first mover advantage, it's the most well-known out there. It's the biggest out there at the moment. And so naturally, if you're getting into the blockchain space, deploying an application, you're going to be familiar with, you know, the programming language Solidity or maybe Vipher. And then, you know, you're deploying Ethereum, you understand how, like, how to write a smart contract and how to deploy it. And so it's very important, in our opinion, to be EVM compatible in order to be able to get all of those like sorts of developers to be able to deploy in Phantom, rather than having to relearn like a new language or a new technology stack or anything like that. So when we were like building out the Phantom consensus engine, we were thinking about, okay, so what smart contract technology do we want to integrate with? You know, do we want to create our own one, or do we want to use the existing one? And we very easily came to the conclusion that we wanted to be EVM compatible. And to begin with, we wanted to basically just use the EVM as is, right? And we're still using the EVM to this day until we switch over to the new technology. And that was kind of for two reasons. And it is really like essentially commercial reasons, right? One is to be able to tap into the existing Ethereum developers, as I just mentioned. But the other reason is that, you know, the Ethereum virtual machine and the smart contract technology stack that Ethereum has, although it has a lot of scalability issues, and these are the issues that we tried to solve for, it nevertheless does work, right? You can see it work, you know, people deploy applications on Ethereum and they work just fine. So, you know, it was also convenient for us because the technology already existed. And so we didn't have to, you know, spend time trying to build our own and testing and that sort of thing. We could just attach it to, you know, the Phantom consensus engine and be able to launch the Phantom mainnet as we did at the end of December 2019. That being said, you know, we wanted to solve these scalability problems. But a very important criteria that I said to the team very early on when I started developing the new technology is, and they said, you know, I know like the Solidity program language is not the best language that's out there, but we need to be Solidity compatible. We need to be EVM compatible because that's what people are used to. Even though we may be able to get some more performance gains by, you know, creating like a very different like smart contract engine that's not compatible with Solidity or the Ethereum virtual machine, or write our own smart contract language, it's going to put us at a disadvantage, I think, commercially. And so to be clear, the Phantom virtual machine is entirely compatible with any smart contract that uses the Ethereum virtual machine. So any existing smart contract on the Phantom network can automatically benefit from the new Phantom virtual machine when it's deployed. Another important thing is that the new storage mechanism that we created that significantly reduces, you know, storage requirements and also significantly improves like the throughput and the execution speed of smart contracts. And that also is compatible with the Ethereum virtual machine and compatible with the existing storage structures of the of Phantom mainnet, right? Meaning that when people take advantage of this new storage technology, they're not going to have to relearn something, right? They're not going to have to redeploy the application. They're not going to have to use a different programming language or different or learn like a different way of deploying. It will all work for like pretty much the same way. And I think that's very important because as a developer, it's, oh, wow, I can take advantage more of this new technology, all the scalability that comes with it. And I don't have to learn, you know, everything from scratch again. So being compatible with, you know, Ethereum developers has always been a very important goal at Phantom.
Yeah, that is great. That makes a lot of sense. Now, we all know that developing these technologies is not an easy feat. I'd be very keen on hearing what the different teams and their roles are that are contributing to the core development of the Phantom blockchain itself.
Yeah, sure. So there are primarily like three teams that are out there, right? So there's a team of engineers in the Czech Republic who work together pretty closely in the same office environment or similar office environment. And they work on, they've been working on this new Phantom virtual machine technology and storage system that I just talked about. And they've been closely collaborating with a team run by Professor Bernard Schultz, who was my old supervisor at the University of Sydney while I was studying there. He's a professor at the University of Sydney. And he joined our team around May or June last year. And so he is really, and his team are really like the architects of this new technology that I talked about, because his background is in an area called like programming languages, right? So he's an expert in, you know, how programming languages work, you know, security properties of programming languages, ways to, you know, improve efficiency of executing code, et cetera. And so he took all of these ideas that he spent decades researching himself with regards to, you know, other like technologies outside of the blockchain space, namely, for example, like optimizing, you know, Java code for Oracle or Android-based operating system code and virtual machine code. He took those sorts of like properties that he had learned from outside of the blockchain and incorporated those ideas into the blockchain technology, because the way that Professor Schultz views like the way that smart contracts executes is that is essentially like another programming language, right? So the ideas of, you know, programming languages outside of blockchain pretty much apply in a very similar manner when you're dealing with programming languages inside of a blockchain or smart contracts that deploy on a blockchain. And so, you know, him and his team were really the archetypes around this new technology. And they worked very closely with this team in the Czech Republic to basically build the new like Sonic technology that we have coming out. And then there's a third team that's more distributed, run by our CTO, Kwan Nguyen. And they're very much like focused, they were very much the original guys who built the Phantom chain that we have at the moment, right? You know, they worked in 2018, 2019 to build the Phantom mainnet and integrated with, you know, the Ethereum virtual machine, and they launched it. And so the technology that Phantom currently operates on was really like built and designed by them. So we have to give them a lot of credit for it. And right now their objective is to keep optimizing and making sure the network remains stable as is, right? But, you know, they're going to be working more closely, I envision, with Bernard and the Czech Republic team run by an individual called Jakub when they deploy this new technology to the network. So there's three unique teams at the moment, but they all sort of like collaborate closely together. And I think they all merge into like essentially like one team as a whole. Yeah, but these are the developers who are responsible for, you know, the Phantom mainnet and the new Sonic technology that we've got coming out.
Got it. Sounds like you have a really solid structure in place in terms of core contributors to the Phantom blockchain. That's always great to hear. Now, I want to move on to your economic model next, now that we understand how you're kind of positioned from a technical and optimization perspective. Could you describe Phantom's economic model? And what I mean by that is how kind of value flows through the protocol in terms of where fees paid to, who is incentivized for what activity, how is value captured, etc.
Yeah, sure. The Phantom consensus runs on proof of stake, right? And so proof of stake is when, you know, you have a node that holds a particular stake. It may hold its own stake. It may have stake delegated to it by other members of the community. And essentially, it just continuously participates in voting, right? So when a transaction gets sent to the network, a node votes, you know, whether to include it or not. And then it passes, you know, the information to another node and it also takes a vote, et cetera. And then once you have 2/3 of the total votes, of the network, confirm the transaction, then the transaction is considered to be final, right? And that means that it's included into the block. It can't be like, you know, rewritten. It can't be overdone. Finality is final, right? And that's a very unique property of the Phantom chain compared to, say, Ethereum, right? Is it's not based on any probabilistic finality. It's not based on the longest chain rule, right? It's based on this concept of once you get 2/3 votes, that's it. That's the definition of finality, right? It's not, oh, you know, different like stakers in the network, you know, run like different like chains, and it's about, okay, which is the longest chain overall, right? Unlike, say, Ethereum. And so the way that the economic model works is that fees get paid to these validators. So if people, you know, commit transactions in the network, they pay a fee, and then the fee gets distributed to the network as a proportion of their stake, right? So if you ever know that, you know, stakes, say, 1/10 of the total Phantom that's being staked on the network, they will get 1/10 of the transaction fees on the network. So it's all done proportionally, but the validators on the network, they don't get 100% of the transaction fees. They get 70% of the transaction fees. And then the other 30% goes elsewhere. So about 15 or 20% goes to this program that we got on the network called the gas monetization program. And it's very similar to, say, the YouTube or the Twitter monetization program. Essentially, if you have a proper application that generates a lot of transactions, you get a share of the transaction fees of the transactions that are flowing through your network, right? And over the past few months since we've launched this project, we've been able to generate hundreds of thousands of dollars in transaction fees that are given back directly to the developers of these popular applications. And so what it does is it encourages people to, you know, create popular applications that enables people to submit a lot of transactions to the network. And that means that, you know, validators get paid more because there's more transactions flowing through the network. It means that developers get paid more because they've got more transactions going through the application. And so it's kind of like a win-win for, you know, the network as a whole, right? For the developers and users and validators on the network as well, right? And then we've also got a portion of the transaction fees that currently goes to what we call the Vault program. And it's a discretionary grant run by the Phantom Foundation. And every like quarter or so, we distribute the Phantom that's in this vault to projects that, you know, we think that could benefit the Phantom ecosystem the most, right? And so far over the past few months, we've been able to also distribute, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars to developers on the Phantom network as well. So, you know, essentially like the economics is a pretty standard, like proof of stake economic model. It's all about transaction fees. And I think that's how you create a sustainable blockchain in the end.
Got it. It sounds like you have been able to really align incentives with the desired outcomes that you have at Phantom with that model. That's great. Now, you mentioned sustainability there. I want to dig into that one because it is, in the context of blockchains, always a topic of discussion that what does economic sustainability mean? So from your perspective, how do you define economic sustainability for a blockchain?
So I think for a blockchain, the business model, and we spend a lot of time thinking about it, the business model is really about, you know, it's a transaction fee-based business model, right? So if you take, for example, like existing business models that exist, right? Say like Visa or MasterCard, the way that they make money is by transaction volumes, right? You know, the more people that transaction on the network, the more fees that they pay and the more money that these companies make, right? I think for blockchain is a very similar concept, except different in certain aspects, of course, right? One is that, you know, it's not a central company that is, you know, collecting all of the fees for themselves. It's really like the stakers or the validators in the network that collect the fees, right? And those validators could be anyone, you know, it could be, you know, Phantom Foundation, as, you know, we run some validators. It could be people in the community. It could be anyone around the world, right? Who can stake at Phantom and earn fees as a result of them staking and processing transactions, right? But the other cool difference is that, whereas like Visa and MasterCard focus on just, you know, volumes of payments, and that's what the business model is, for say a blockchain project, it's not like volumes of payments. It's about how much computation do you want the network to confirm, right? Because obviously like there are some transactions that are more complex than others. So if I send one Phantom from my wallet to your wallet, that's a pretty simple transaction, right? Because all the network has to process is, okay, you know, I deduct one Phantom from Michael's wallet, I give one Phantom to you, right? But, you know, there could be a much more complicated smart contract transaction that you're engaging with where, you know, you're minting this NFT with all of this data, et cetera, and the NFT, you know, has certain properties. And that requires more effort for a blockchain to confirm, which means that the transaction fee would be higher for that sort of transaction than a simple transfer that I just illustrated. And so what you're essentially doing is that you're paying for computation to be used on the network, right? That's a transaction fee model. And so the objective is really, okay, how do you build a network that can handle transactions of volume such that the cost of processing a transaction for a validator stays as low as possible, but in aggregate, the network is able to process a tremendous amount of fees such that validators get rewarded, you know, as much as possible for transaction fees on the network. And in aggregate, what you want are really enormous transaction fees, as high as possible, right? But on an individual level, you want the cost per transaction to be as low as possible, right? Because obviously users want low transactions. Validators want to make as many transaction fees as possible. And so how you kind of like optimize for, you know, what both parties want is you want to have a network that generates a lot of transactions and therefore a lot of transaction fees, right? And so in order for a network to generate a lot of transactions, you need to have the technology to be able to process it, which is why Phantom has been so focused on, you know, scalability and solving the problems like with Sonic and other technologies that I talked about. And the other aspect of it is also on the demand side is being able to have enough popular applications and network to be able to generate, you know, these sorts of transactions that you want for the network, right? Because obviously, if you don't have the technology, then you don't have the capacity to be able to handle large number of transactions at low cost, right? But equally, if you don't have the demand, then you also won't have, you know, high numbers of transactions at low cost because you don't have enough people using the network. So if you're able to solve for kind of both problems in the long run, then you have a really sustainable economic model, which is just basically a fee-based model for the user.
That is a great answer. And now kind of building on how this fee-based model works and comparing it to more traditional software businesses, having raised venture capital, can you describe how the venture case for a network like Phantom with your fee-based model differs from that of a traditional software business that we have gotten used to seeing being venture-backed?
Yeah, sure. So Phantom did like an initial coin offering, an ICO, back in early to mid 2018. We completed our ICO in June 2018. And really what sort of like how we sold like the Phantom project, right, was that we had solved or that we were planning to solve like these scalability issues that existed with what was then just Ethereum at the time, right? And being able to do it by, you know, being able to process transactions in an asynchronous manner, as I described earlier, right? And essentially like the business model was, okay, we're raising funds so we can sell this token. This token represents like your ability to, you know, perform certain actions on the network, right? You know, be able to stake it and earn a fee on the network, be able to vote on like governance to influence like how the network goes going forward, and also to be able to pay transaction fees in the network, right? And so essentially the way I think about it is that if you own FTM, right, you basically own like a portion of like how the network operates. You know, for example, if you own, you know, like 1% of the supply of Phantom, you can, you know, stake that 1% of the supply and you get, you know, 1% of the transaction fees because you're part of consensus amounting to 1% of the total consensus on the network that's being staked, right? And so it's really about like network ownership, right? And so that's the business model essentially for, you know, a distributed ledger network out there that has its own token, because, you know, you don't have a centralized authority that, you know, controls the whole network or, you know, owns the network, right? You don't necessarily have like shareholders like a corporation does, right? And you basically have this network where anybody can participate in it from anywhere around the world. And the way you participate in it is via the token, or for Phantom, it's like the FTM token, right? And so I think like the token-based model is very similar to other blockchain projects out there, including Ethereum itself, right? Because how does like the Ethereum, you know, Ether token work, right? Well, it works in a similar manner, right? You use it to pay transaction fees, but you also can use it to stake, which means that you participate in consensus and you earn a proportion of the fees that are generated on the Ethereum network as a whole. And it's pretty much no different from Phantom as well. And that obviously differs in many ways from a traditional business, you know, as I mentioned before, which, you know, is a single corporation. You know, the people who work for the corporation, you know, work for the shareholders of the corporation, and they're really just focused on generating returns for the shareholders. In this situation, it's, you know, it's just a network that anybody can join and leave, and that creates value not just from one authority like the Fanta Foundation, but it creates value from anyone who decides to build an application on top of it and submit transactions on the network, or anyone who decides to participate in the validation of transactions on the network. So it's much more open than a normal corporation or business.
Yeah, it definitely is. Thank you for laying it out so clearly. I think that's helpful for many people, and also kind of building those comparisons between the more traditional companies and then how it works on something like Phantom. When we go into the details of trying to measure the value of a blockchain network, what do you see as the best metrics or KPIs to measure success?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, you know, how you generate a sustainable blockchain-based business model is really about transaction fees in the end, right? So the ultimate KPI is how much transaction fees do you generate, say, on a daily basis, a weekly basis, or like a monthly basis, right? But there are other metrics that are sort of related that are also like kind of important to analyze, right? Because how you get to a network that generates high transaction fees is a number of different components that I mentioned before, right? Obviously, you need to have a lot of transactions flowing through the network. So, you know, looking at like daily transaction volumes is also very important. How much users are paying per transaction is also very important as well, right? Because obviously the number of transactions multiplied by the average transaction fee per transaction is the fee amount paid to the network on a daily basis, right? A pretty simple formula. So that's also a very important metric as well. You can also look at like more dApp-specific metrics as well, just kind of see, you know, what sort of applications do people really want to use on the blockchain network. So for example, like on Phantom right now, we have a very popular game called S4 Kingdom, which is basically just a game where you build up a character, you level him or her up, and you engage in all sorts of different skills, you know, fighting skills, mining skills, fishing, etc. And we see that's quite popular, that people want to play those sorts of games where they can build up a character and they can fully own the character, because it's all stored as an NFT on the network, right? And so that tells me that, you know, gaming or this particular aspect of gaming, say building up a character, you know, like a role-playing based game, seems to be quite a popular application, because that's where the transactions are being generated, right? And also, you know, other types of applications are like swaps, right? You know, swaps have traditionally been very popular on many blockchain platforms. Phantom has been no different as well. And so you see that, you know, people, you know, not using decentralized exchanges and being able to swap assets easily from one to another. And so that also is like a kind of application that generates a lot of transactions as well. So you can start off like at the top level thinking about transaction fees and kind of breaking that down and what that really means in terms of all sorts of like different metrics that exist on a blockchain network.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've recently been speaking quite a bit with different crypto investors about valuation frameworks for different blockchain networks. And in a lot of them, one pretty major component ends up being the monetary premium of the network's native token. I want to ask you that, how do you see monetary premium in the context of FTM?
I don't think for a Phantom, I wouldn't really call it like Phantom, like it doesn't necessarily have the properties of money. Like obviously like people can use, you know, Phantom as, you know, a medium of exchange, a store of value, you know, all like the critical components for what really makes like money like so valuable. The way I kind of think about it is, you know, the FTM token and its potential use case, right? You know, its ability to, you know, earn fees by staking it and help validate transactions in the network, its ability to pay transaction fees on the network itself, right? Its ability to participate in governance, right? I don't really see it as, you know, a traditional form of money in any like normal sense, but more of a utility token or a token that has, you know, particular attributes that say, you know, US dollars or gold or, you know, other tokens don't have, that's particular for the Phantom network as a whole, right? So I don't claim to say that, oh, you know, Phantom is a new standard of money or whatever, or is it like the new universal currency or anything like that, because I don't think that's really true. And I don't think that's the purpose of FTM as a whole. You know, maybe that's the purpose of Bitcoin, of gold, of hard assets, et cetera, but not really what Phantom is designed for. So I don't really think there exists like a monetary premium for the FTM token.
Yeah, that is a great answer. And what you basically spoke about beforehand as well, that it is based on the ability to generate fees as little as possible on a per transaction basis, but in aggregate as much as possible. And that is very different to something where you have Bitcoin, where the fee generation is X, inflation is somewhat high compared to the fee generation, And the whole value, the biggest component of that would be related to monetary premium. So two very different types of networks there.
Yeah. And also like in terms of like Bitcoin, you know, by earning Bitcoin, you don't participate in like network consensus, right? You don't participate in being able to confirm transactions and you earn a fee from it, right? So the way that fees are distributed in Bitcoin is completely different from owning Bitcoin as a whole, right? Because obviously like you confirm transactions in Bitcoin via the Bitcoin miners. Well, a Bitcoin miner doesn't technically need to hold any Bitcoin. It can hold zero Bitcoin because it's confirming transactions via, you know, the computers solving these prime number problems and adding security to the network. Well, that's completely separate from the actual Bitcoin token itself, right? Whereas for a proof of stake network like Phantom, you need to own FTM to be able to run your validator to secure transactions in the network, because that's like the mechanism.
Yeah, definitely. That was a great addition there. Now, moving on to kind of current and upcoming developments, more from maybe a business development type perspective, what are the biggest challenges or bottlenecks related to Phantom's growth right now?
So I think there's like a few bottlenecks. One of them on the technology side is, you know, the current Phantom mainnet like isn't as scalable as we'd, you know, hope it is. You know, its finality, you know, it is like pretty low, but it does vary a bit, as I mentioned in the example of the minting of the NFT. There are like a number of scalability issues in terms of the growth of the data sizes on the chain, which is causing issues for validators at the moment because of like how many, you know, transactions, how much data is stored. I think we've gone a long way in solving these problems with the new technology Sonic, you know, being able to reduce the storage dramatically, being able to significantly improve throughput, being able to give it actually make finality lower than the current Phantom network, where, you know, it can be like even like sub-second in many cases, while like still being able to process large number of transactions. So that's one aspect. You know, we definitely haven't solved all the technology problems with the new technology, but I think we go a long way in solving it. And there are other ideas that we have in mind, like I discussed, like sharding and other things to further help solve the technology problems. And then I think other problems on the business side are the fact that, you know, we had, you know, the multi-chain incident. Multi-chain was, you know, not like the breach for Phantom, but it was like the biggest breach for Phantom. And, you know, it's unfortunate what happened with multi-chain. A lot of it, you know, was a combination of bad luck and other circumstances. And that really hampered our growth, particularly on the DeFi side, because obviously a lot of people had bridged tokens to Phantom via multi-chain and, you know, built on DeFi applications around that. That being said, there are, you know, other bridges that have come in around the same time or subsequent, like multi-chain, namely like Layer 0 and Axler, and there's a few others as well. And they've really helped enable people to bridge more tokens to Phantom and engage in DeFi again. And we're also working on native stablecoin issuance with a few number of like different providers out there that, you know, some people may be aware of. And hopefully, you know, if we can get them to issue like a native stablecoin on Phantom that's backed by, you know, fiat currencies from the outside world, because I think that's also important for the growth of the DeFi network on Phantom as a whole. And I think just overall, like the perception of Phantom, right? Because I know that, you know, Phantom had a pretty good reputation in 2021, even though it had a number of issues as well, especially in terms of bottlenecks, because the chain was getting really popular. And then we had the whole issue around, you know, Andre supposedly like leaving when he didn't really leave. And then, you know, now more recent, like issues with multi-chain, et cetera. I think over time, those problems are dealt with when you find solutions for it. Like obviously, you know, Andre like never really left Phantom. He just wasn't communicated as well. You know, for personal reasons, he went a bit quiet publicly, but now he's a lot more like public now, right? And with regards to, say, multi-chain, you know, there are solutions to that as well, as I just talked about. So I think if we find solutions to all of these business problems that are out there and keep finding more solutions towards technology problems, if, you know, we're solving these problems as we're going into, say, better market conditions, then I think Phantom will be in a very good position to capitalize on the new leg of growth that, you know, we anticipate will occur with regards to number of users in the blockchain space.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, on the opposite side of challenges, what would you say are the most exciting things happening within your ecosystem right now then?
I think the most exciting thing is the new technology that we've got coming out, because the results there have really like exceeded our expectations, right? When we started like working on solving these technology problems, you know, with the virtual machine, the storage and other problems related to consensus, we weren't really sure, you know, what the performance benefits would be. In theory, we believe that the performance benefits would be, you know, quite significant. Like obviously, otherwise we wouldn't have, you know, embarked on this new technology. But we weren't sure about the specific numbers, obviously, until we actually developed the technology. But as we started developing the technology and experimenting in particular, you know, we started to see really positive results that, wow, we can generate, you know, a couple of thousand transactions per second. Wow, we can reduce the finality to, you know, even 0.6 or 0.7 seconds while the network is still handling a lot of transactions. Well, we really can reduce storage by, you know, 90%+, maybe in some cases, even like close to 98%, right? And so when we started, you know, experimenting more and seeing these good results, we became more and more confident that they would be available in reality, right? And it all came together in, you know, the testnet that we just launched a few days ago, as I mentioned, right? Seeing people be able to interact with it, seeing the community, you know, being able to see, oh, wow, the network really is being able to process, you know, all these transactions per second. Oh, wow, like the time to finality really is a lot lower than previously because, you know, I've been able to experiment, you know, with different swaps and minting NFTs. I could see it's just like blazingly fast compared to existing technology. So I think that to us is the most exciting thing because now we can see all that hard work that we spent more than a year and a half working on really come to fruition. And I really think, as I said to Bernard yesterday, that we're approaching the finishing line of the beginning, right? In other words, we're approaching the finishing line of the first iteration of this new technology, but there's still so much more to come in terms of, you know, more scalability problems and other like problems that we can solve going into the future as well. And we have a lot of ideas and we're very confident in those ideas given the results that we've gotten at the moment. So that to me personally is like what is the most exciting at the moment because I think it will be an absolute game changer. I think it will allow us to get really popular applications and network performing, you know, large volumes of transactions and the network will still operate really fast. And that these games will have a great user experience because when they submit a transaction in network, it will just be like done like almost instantly, right? And in terms of, you know, more on the business side, I guess, as I mentioned before, we have a, you know, popular gaming application, a Phantom called, I guess, for Kingdom, right? And that shows that, you know, that people are able to build popular applications on Phantom and really take advantage of the existing technology and the new technology and generate like large numbers of transactions. And so what we're looking to do is to get, you know, very similarly like popular applications, you know, whereas in gaming and DeFi, you know, back on the Phantom and generating large transaction volumes. Because I think the way that like transactions are generated, not just like on a blockchain network, but across any popular application, right? Is that you look at like YouTube, right? It's not like 10,000, it's not 10,000 channels that generate the vast majority of transactions, right? Or number of like viewers on the network, right? It's like the top 50 content creators on YouTube that really generate the vast majority of viewership for the YouTube network. And that's just like a normal way that like returns are distributed, right? There's always like asymmetrically skewed towards a few individuals or a few projects, right? And I think for a blockchain network, it's no different, right? You know, all we need on Phantom is 10 or 20 really popular applications, and they will account for the vast majority of transactions on the network. So what we're trying to look for when we're giving out grants, et cetera, and talking to projects is what are the next projects that are out there that are going to get really popular and that are going to, you know, maintain their popularity and are going to have developers behind them that are really interested in actually growing and maintaining the project, that they're not just going to abandon it, you know, at some point in the future. So that's how we really see the opportunities going forward.
Those are definitely some lucrative opportunities, and the initial results of the new technologies sound really promising. So I can't wait to see how everything plays out once you start rolling that out to mainnet. Sounds really great. I think at this point, I think this is a good stage to wrap up. Thank you so much, Michael, for this great and compact overview of Phantom and everything going on within your network and also how you're positioned within this space. I wish you and the team the best of luck in everything coming up, and I hope we can dive into some of these topics in more detail in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And again, like, thanks so much for your time, mate. Like, really appreciate the opportunity.